From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.
Hello. Today, I welcome Dan Grow, our supremo, highly detailed investigative articles, and I want to talk about the recent content he's produced on St. James's Place. We'll call them SJP from now on. So, Dan, you wrote a brilliant detailed piece on SJP's new charging structure. Mm-hmm. Do you want to give us a little overview of what you discovered through your investigations?
I think that was the interesting thing about, you know, when, as they've been announcing these charges, they haven't explicitly said these will be cheaper for everyone. So I wanted to find out, who would it be cheaper for, and would it be cheaper for everyone? And the complication in doing that lies in its old charging structure. The new charging structure is pretty straightforward. The old charging structure isn't.
So they get a tick for the new charging structure, yes, in your book.
With the ISA business, which represents around a third of their assets, it is pretty straightforward. So you've got the old initial product charge of 0.5%, that's been scrapped. And the initial advice charge, which has been up to 4.5%, that's moving to 1% to 3% depending on portfolio size.
So you could pay up to 4.5% of your 20 grand ISA allowance?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the story that we get is that will kind of vary. You know, there is scope to sort of vary that within SJP's model, right, but it can be up to 4.5%. Okay. And that's what they put on their website. The ongoing charge for ISAs, and this is kind of SJP sort of all-in fee, so the fund, the advice, the administration, that's going to be moving from around 1.64% to around 1.59%. So on both those fronts for ISAs, the initial and the ongoing, it's cheaper. There's no ambiguity about that. The ambiguity comes with the pension and investment bond business, which is...
That's much bigger. That's about $140 billion.
Yeah.
Out of there, roughly
190.
Yeah.
So that is moving again. The initial product charge is being scrapped. That was 1.5% for pensions and investment bonds, and the initial advice charge, that is moving from 4.5 to a range of 1% to 3%, depending on portfolio size. The tricky bit is in comparing the new ongoing charge for that business versus the old.
Before we go there, weren't there exit charges before?
Yeah, and so this is kind of reflected.
Oh, that's
how
part of that.
How the ongoing charge works. So you had that sort of big initial charge on the pension and investment bond business under the kind of existing charging structure. And in compensation for that, you then have an ongoing charge that's 0.92% for the first 6 years, then goes up to 1.92, and then it's 1.77 after that. This is the old structure.
Right.
The new structure is 1.67 every year.
Ongoing.
Yes, yeah. So that's quite hard. Trying to compare those two sort of structures is quite hard. And so the way I did it was to look at kind of varying portfolio sizes, assume investment growth of around 5% per year. So that would help to take into account the tiering. So there's tiering of the initial charge under the new structure. There's also less significant tiering of the ongoing charge. So the bigger your portfolio is, marginally less you pay. And what you found is that because of this lower initial charge under the new structure, initially clients would be paying less. But then once you started to compare the new ongoing charge versus that old lower 0.92% in the first 6 years, that the new charging structure actually then becomes more expensive. And it's and it takes a number of years for it eventually to become cheaper again. And that takes longer for smaller portfolios. So if you've got a £250,000 portfolio that grows at 5% a year, it's going to be year 16 of your investment before the new charging structure becomes cheaper than the old.
Right.
Larger portfolios, it takes less time.
Right. But presumably it's cheaper for all those people, or for those people that started with SJP and then quit within the exit period.
Yes, because then you would be...
Then you're clobbered.
With the exit penalty.
Okay, and I think, look, it's highly complicated, but I think maybe another way of looking at this is just to say, okay, these are the new charges. How does that compare with the market?
Yeah.
And what's your opinion there? Are they broadly in line with the market now, or...?
I think on that front, you know, there will be advisors charging less, but it seems... a reasonable kind of fee proposition.
Yeah. And of course, you know, ultimately it does come down to quality, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And there I think you've also got that's relevant is the quality of the fund selection that they do. And we know that SJP for years, I mean, going right back to the Mark Weinberg days, has always used external asset managers. And has become a massively important source of funds for external asset managers. So what's going on in that area? If you think you've said as much as you want to on the charges, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I guess the one other thing to talk about with relation to the charges is how it kind of impacts SJP as a business and kind of the
money, bottom line.
Yeah, the money that it makes.
Yes.
So, I mean, that will change, and that is changing quite dramatically. And it's, you know, it's going to be going through a couple of years of pain because of what it's doing. Because the initial margin that it makes on business, which is solely a product of the initial product charge.
Yes.
I mean, there's the initial advice charge as well, but that's largely absorbed by advice costs.
Yes.
So it's that 1.5% on the investment bond and pension business, the 0.5% on the ISAs, that's vanishing, you know, overnight when the new charging structure comes into...
So, but would it be fair to say that they're taking a short-term hit for having a longer-term sustainable business?
Yeah, because, you know, how the business will change is that sort of six-year period where after the kind of the big initial hit from... investment bond and pension business, SJP doesn't make any money on those first 6 years. It calls it like the gestation period in its results. Eventually, you know, as those who are kind of signing up under the new structure get to the end of their 6 years,
and
you know, eventually SJP will be making money every year on every element of its business. So it starts to look much more like a normal advice business.
And actually, I would say a healthier one.
Yes. Yeah.
And also better for the clients, mm-hmm. isn't it? Because they've got less taken out of their money at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, it will, you know, it just becomes, and also better, easier to compare against other advisors.
Look, I think it's it feels to me like it's more transparent, more normal, more safe from regulators, and probably ultimately better all round. So that's taking them in the right direction.
Yeah, I think
okay.
So
let's talk about third-party asset managers, because there's an awful lot going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, and I'd say the two key trends are the launch of the Polaris funds, which are, you know, they've had a meteoric rise. So they were launched in November 2022. They're already 60 billion.
What are the Polaris funds?
So they're multi-asset funds. There's four of them, and they're each graded according to, you know, how much risk clients want to take.
What would be parallels to Polaris in the market? Vanguard Life Strategy?
Yeah, Vanguard Life Strategy.
I think Quilter probably has got something.
The Ceridium ranges.
Yeah.
MyFolio.
Standard Life, or Aberdeen now? Or
again, it's, you know, it's the same thing that we're seeing with the charges. SJP is moving closer to what the rest of the market does. And it's kind of centralizing its investment proposition more than it has done, because, you know, increasing amounts of money client money is going into Polaris rather than, you know, individual SJP advisors constructing their own portfolios. So the Polaris funds are, they're made up predominantly of SJP funds.
Yes.
So it's the same SJP funds that advisors have always been recommending, but they're packaged together in this, you know, where the asset allocation is determined by the managers of Polaris.
Yes.
So it's a combination of mostly that and around a quarter of the portfolios in index trackers. So from iShares for equity and from State Street for bonds.
Okay. And is that passive element increasing?
It has done, but that's largely been down to the that State Street bond tracker kind of becoming a bigger part of the portfolios. SJP sold out of its global absolute return fund within Polaris, put more money into the bond kind of portions of the portfolios, and it prefers that passive tracker for its bond allocation.
So the global absolute return bond was run by active managers?
Yes, it was.
Right. So they've switched some money from active to passive.
Yeah. So
are we able to put an overall figure on that? Or, I mean, presumably we're talking billions.
Yeah. I mean, if I went, but the Global Absolute Return Fund shrank by $2.5 billion after Polaris moved out of it. So large amounts of money, because I mean the range is $60 billion. So it doesn't have to make a massive investment decision for that to have quite big consequences in terms of the amount of money.
Yes.
And that passive shift, you're seeing it within Polaris. You're seeing it in what SJP are talking about now. So in the full year results, they talked about, potentially developing a pure kind of passive proposition. But you're also seeing it in what they're doing with their mandates. So the funds that sort of predated Polaris. There's been quite a lot of activity in terms of changing management of those funds.
Yes.
And in a fair number of the ones that we've seen in the past few years, what SJP has been doing has been switching from a more expensive active manager to a cheaper passive or quasi sort of passive manager.
For some of the fund or all of the fund?
In some cases, for all of the fund.
Oh, right. So they're going entirely passive on some third-party funds.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Do you have an example of that?
So the most... the most striking example is SJP International Equity. So it's now around kind of £15 billion in that fund.
Yes.
But it's moved from a manager that was charging 0.5%. It was actually a tiered fee. So Magellan got 0.5% and then 0.375% for anything over $400 million.
Yes.
So most of it was
that level, yeah.
And it's moved to State Street, which is charging 0.03%.
Right.
So
it's basically a global equities tracker.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are kind of ways in which State Street are managing it where it won't just be, you know, as simple as, you know, buying MSCI All Countries World Index. But essentially, you know, that is what it is, and that's reflected in the substantially kind of lower costs.
Yes.
The SJP is having to pay to its managers.
Well, they're paying, if my rudimentary maths are right, they're paying a tenth of what they used to pay.
Yeah.
So presumably the fund and the investors in that fund benefit.
Yeah. I mean, that gets passed on.
Yes.
I mean, as with all SJP funds, and obviously, you know, this is changing because their charging model is changing. On top of that 0.03%, St. James's Place is making 1.34%. So, and that pays for the advice. It pays for the kind of administration. So what you would be paying to a platform if you were holding it with someone else.
Yes. And
it pays for, you know, the running of the fund in the sense of the authorized corporate director sort of functions. While it's moving to these kind of passive mandates, you're not seeing, the sticker price on the fund doesn't look like a passive fund.
That's interesting. So you're, I, I think where you were, what you're actually going to say is you're seeing like the charges have come down by 9/10 of the actual management component, the asset management component, but the overall charge hasn't come down that much, if at all.
Well, no, the overall charge will come down by the amount by which SJP cuts what it's paying to managers.
Right.
You know, that gets passed on.
Right, okay,
but
yes.
Proportionally, because the
yes.
Yeah, SJP's fee accounts for a much larger portion of that.
Yes.
It doesn't look as impressive.
Yes, so, I see what you mean. It looks like a very expensive tracker.
Yeah, so I think when they move to this new charging structure, because the other element that we haven't discussed is, as well as the numbers, the headline numbers changing, the way in which those charges will be presented is changing. So instead of having this all-in fee...
Bundled.
Yeah. You will have separate charges for advice, for product, for administration. And so the product fee, the fund fee, we know from what SJP has said in analyst calls that that will be the product of what SJP is paying fund managers for running the funds and a margin of around 0.17%. For SJP.
Right.
So, you know, in the case of this international equity fund, with State Street making 0.03%,
yes,
you add on SJP's cut and then you've got a 0.2% fund, which starts to look a lot more like, you know, Vanguard Large Trustee charges 0.1%, a little bit more actually.
Yes.
But I think that, you know, we had Andrew Croft, the previous chief executive of SJP, sort of talking about how the new charging structure would make a passive proposition more viable. And I think that's one way in which it does, in that as SJP is able to cut the charges that it's paying out to fund managers, you know, that sort of gets reflected more in the price that the funds have.
But what you can't do is you can't just buy that fund and not have the advice and the admin and all of that. You can't do that. You have to be in the SJP ecosphere, I assume.
Yeah. You know, and in some cases with SJP's funds, you couldn't even buy those funds anyway because it's, you know, it's their kind of particular selection of the managers that they want running the bits.
And, yes.
You know, that they are very unique to SJP.
Yes. Okay, so what else is changing in terms of third-party asset managers?
I mean, I think there's been... It certainly looks like there's been more movement from SJP than there used to be.
I've seen that. I mean, they've got a new investment team in there. They used to outsource a lot of this to Stanford Associates and Reddington. I think they mainly do it all themselves now, or certainly a lot of it. I think they had some people from Stanford. But at the end of the day, it's still this huge juggernaut. And there is a sense, I think, that they are being a bit more brutal.
Yeah, I mean, the passive move is obviously a kind of component of this. But I think there's more to it. In that, you know, SJP have been sort of year by year cutting the amount that they're paying fund managers. And so you can kind of see in some cases where there wasn't a tiering of the fund manager's fee, that that tiering has been introduced, even though there haven't been any other kind of changes to the mandates.
Right, yes. Well, that's just normal commercial sense, surely.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been driving down what it pays out to fund managers, while at the same time maintaining its own margin. So doing something similar to what a lot of advice businesses are doing, you know, where costs are being reduced, that's largely coming from the investment side of, you know, the financial planning proposition, not from the financial planning side. So I think that's, you know, the passive element of that obviously contributes quite a lot.
Yes.
But, you know, I think it's something that it's been trying to do across the board. And, you know, starting from a place where typically managers who get SJP mandates are going to be paid less than what they'd be able to make if they were running those funds themselves. It's almost universally the case where you look at an SJP fund and find the kind of corresponding fund run by the manager at their own firm, Yes. And they're making more money on that fund. But, you know, there's still this kind of clamour from fund groups to get an SJP mandate, because what SJP brings is assets, it's scale.
Scale,
you know.
Scale.
And especially, you know, you see it, you know, particularly in the case of boutiques and small firms where their SJP sort of assets are, you know, a large part, if not, you know, nearly the entirety of the money they run.
I know, they say SJP can make or break a firm.
Yeah, well, you know, there's evidence of that, isn't there?
There is.
Somerset Capital.
Yeah.
It hasn't broken Impact's, but, you know, when Impact's lost that mandate, it was a, you know, fairly significant impact on the share price, and for good reason, because that's, you know, it's lost a lot of assets in one fell swoop.
Yes.
So
I think there was a US manager, probably should remain nameless, I think his business was more or less, once the money was taken away, more or less, certainly shrank a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't blame them in this respect, in that, why, if you've got scale, I mean, I remember when SJP, not that long ago, SJP was less than 100 billion, and Chris Ralph was saying, oh, I think eventually they'll get to 100 billion. Chris used to run the money there, will be chief investment officer, and they're 180. So, they're flexing their muscle.
Mm.
That's what they're doing, and you can't blame them. I remember Peter Hargreaves used to complain in the old days, pre-RDR, when everybody charged 0.75. He used to say, this is ridiculous. You know, I ought to be able to get this much cheaper given my scale. So that's what they're doing. I just wonder whether there's any sort of overall conclusions you have. You know, if you were a third-party asset manager, either wanting to get in with SJP or already there, have you got any sort of kind of view as to what you would do or feel?
I mean, I think if you're already there and your fund's not doing that well, you'd probably be more wary and anxious now than you would have been, say, 10 years ago. I think there's much more scrutiny on costs. Costs are becoming more transparent. There's much more scrutiny on performance.
Yes.
You know, the value assessment reports.
Yes.
You know, there's 13 of SJP funds, you know, were deemed not to have kind of delivered value. So if you're running any of those 13 funds,
you've got to feel at risk.
Particularly if you're an active manager,
and
particularly if your charges are, you know, on the higher end of what SJP is used to paying, then I think, you know, you could be vulnerable to, you know, the next sort of switch to a more passive, cheaper kind of option. And I think, you know, of managers that are wanting to get an SJP mandate, I mean, this is, you know, it's not exclusively the case, but if you look at the sorts of managers that have been getting mandates in recent years, those that are able to offer a cheaper, maybe kind of quant sort of strategy, you know, they're being favoured more than SJP used to. You know, they're just very vigilant about costs. I think, you know, that maybe is a bigger factor now than it has been before.
One other thing, when you wrote your article on costs, excellent article, and I know even within SJP they thought it was excellent. The comments below were, you know, a lot of people said, well done, CityWire, this is amazing research, etc. But there were some people saying, why are we writing about SJP yet again? What's your view on that? Are we doing too much SJP? Look at this podcast.
Yeah.
That's SJP. And we know you've got some amazing report coming out on them quite soon. So are we doing too much SJP, do you think?
Well, I mean, we write about financial advice. SJP is the biggest financial advisor in the country. And it's a financial advice business that's going through fairly seismic change in both how it charges, in how it delivers its investments to clients. So I think, you know,
how it presents itself to the market.
Yeah. I mean,
cuff links and all of that stuff, that's gone.
The sheer scale of SJP and its kind of, I guess you'd say, cultural significance for the advice community means that we're always going to be writing quite a lot about it. And that, you know, that's even more the case now because of the changes that are happening.
Yeah, they're not standing still.
No.
So there's loads to write about. Is there anything more you want to say that we haven't already covered?
I think you know, that's...
That's actually a good note to end on.
That's me for now.
I stop myself and say, final question, just in case you had something to say. Thank you, Dan. Another enlightening podcast. Look forward to doing more with you.
Thank you, Lawrence. See you next time.
From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.